Forgiveness is both an event and a process. A big yes, I chose to forgive, followed by many little yeses as the months and years roll by. That dirty bucket of water was my first big yes. Pebbles in a jar. Camille met me at my office after her husband Brent told her that the woman he had an affair with sent a love letter to his work. Brent had broken off the affair 3 years earlier. Brent called me today, Camille said, as soon as he got the email at work. He let his human resources department know since they monitor employee emails. When Brent got home, he wrote an email response to this woman clearly stating he would seek legal action again if she ever tried to contact him again. He wanted me to be comfortable with his reply before sending it. How did it feel to have Brent respond like he did? I asked. After I got through the shock of it, I realized it felt protective. She paused as her eyes welled with tears. I've waited a long time for Brent to do something like this. I can see that. Does Brent know how deeply you feel about what he did? Her face went still, while her lips tightened. I could tell Camille's hippocampus, her memory storage, Amy, her relational brain, and the CEO, her wise mind, were in the midst of a wrestling match. Well, of course I was glad Brent responded like that. What am I supposed to do, march in a parade? It's the least he could do to clean up his mess. The room quieted. You've been hurt, I said. After a long pause, I asked, what would you like to do with the pebble he handed you? What do you mean? I pulled three mason jars out from inside my cabinet. The first jar was filled with smaller pebbles, while the second jar was filled with smooth river rocks. The third jar was filled with rocks, pebbles, and sand. I handed Camille the first two jars. So take one of the pebbles out of the first jar and drop it into the second jar filled with rocks. What happens? Well, she observed, it fell halfway down and got stuck in between a couple of rocks. Brent's affair and porn use caused a betrayal of trust. Like the river rocks, they are still in that jar, I said. Do you see Brent owning his responsibility for the affair? Is he still committed to his recovery work? Yeah, he owns it and knows it was wrong. In fact, on his drive home from the office today, he called a couple of guys in his SA recovery group. We've been trying to heal for over 2 years now. I still feel raw. It's so hard to open myself up to him again. I'm scared something might happen. I get it, I said. I wish recovery was a path that didn't involve more pain. When is the last time Brent sexually acted out? 20 months ago. I handed Camille the third jar filled with river rocks, pebbles, and sand. Brent betrayed you, so it's his responsibility to make good choices towards repairing your trust. Calling you first, talking to human resources, reaching out to guys in his recovery group, and writing a letter threatening legal action if this woman contacts him again are action steps aimed at repairing the breach. It's as if he handed you a few pebbles. Every day Brent continues to walk his sobriety out and safely connect with you, he hands you a grain of sand. I continued, this third container is your jar of trust. He's working on making deposits into your trust account. Can you see how the pebbles and sand wrap around the rocks? Brent will never be able to take the rocks out of the jar. They're a part of your history together. They can't be erased. As Brent provides sobriety and chooses to protect you and himself, the rocks are less in the forefront. You know they're there. yet you're also able to see what Brent's done to restore your trust. A few minutes ago, you teared up because Brent stepped up. He did the right thing to provide a hard boundary and protect you. Are you at a place you could tell Brent how that felt to you? Camille studied the jar with rocks, pebbles, and sand in her hand. I didn't see it till now. I think I was afraid to let go, like if I didn't keep my eyes on the rocks, or if I let him off the hook and forgave him, Brent might forget what happened. My fear of going backwards has kept me from letting go. I do see how Brent's been changing. Brent's steps helped bring Camille the assurance she needed to stay in her marriage. Brent's consistency over time helped Camille take steps towards forgiving and letting go. She began to notice many little yeses she hadn't seen before, written in the pebbles and sand. Sometimes, without even being aware of it, we can hold on to bitterness and resentment. We think doing so might help our husbands remember what they've done, hold them accountable so it won't happen again, level the scales for all they've put us through. Bitterness and unforgiveness towards Connor were weighing me down. As long as I was holding on to justifiable resentment, I would suffer. There was bitter batter stuck inside the bowl of my soul that needed some cleaning out. Forgiveness is how we let go. It's how we get free. 10 discoveries about forgiveness. When we are thrown into the hurt caused by sexual betrayal, it's hard to process it all. While it was easy for me to look at the things that ended our marriage, eventually forgiveness needed to make its way into my heart. These are some of the ideas that helped. 1. Forgiveness isn't cheap. When we add up all the hours of pain, worry, loss, and devastating financial impact, it's not hard to see how much sexual betrayal has cost us. Most of us know at some point we need to forgive. It's not about if, it's about when. Feeling pressured to forgive too soon creates a risk of burying our pain alive. It's okay to take time to grieve what's been lost before choosing to let it go. 2. Forgiveness isn't forgetting. Looking back, I had some really unhealthy ways of dealing with forgiveness. Before we married, I spiritualized Connor's 900 sex call and quickly put a band-aid on my pain and suspicions. I didn't want to feel the pain or deal with what would happen if I looked too close. Quick forgiveness didn't work, and neither did denial. Remembering what happened in order to learn from it helped me face my fear and ask much better questions going forward. 3. Forgiveness involves getting safe. When our husbands continue to sexually act out without remorse, repair, or recovery, it's not the time to forgive. It's time to set boundaries and get safe. 4. Forgiveness isn't a feeling, it's a choice. Forgiveness isn't one and done. It's more like walking across a rickety bridge from one side of a ravine to the other. This process involves taking small, incremental steps towards letting the injustice go. 5. Forgiveness doesn't mean reconciliation. We can forgive someone and leave the relationship without having to stay bonded to them. 6. Forgiveness and healthy marital reconciliation can't be accomplished without disclosure. How can we choose to forgive what we don't know? Authentic healing includes ownership and the betraying spouse being remorseful over the damage that's been done. 7. Forgiveness is essential if the marriage is going to survive and thrive. It's impossible to repair intimacy if one or both spouses are stuck in resentment. Withholding forgiveness, yet staying in the marriage, is a recipe for disaster. 8. Forgiveness doesn't mean we'll never feel pain again. A well-meaning, yet uninformed pastor told a betrayed wife that she hadn't fully forgiven her husband because she got triggered from time to time. The truth is, a trigger is a natural biological stress response to a traumatic wound. It has nothing to do with forgiveness. 9. Forgiveness isn't a straight line. There are ups and downs, twists and turns along this road. The betraying spouse is responsible for doing the heavy lifting in order to restore trust. They need to be willing to be there through suffering no matter how long it takes. Listening with patience and compassion helps us heal. 10. Forgiveness isn't about being fair. It's impossible for our husbands to pay back the debt from the harm that's impacted us. A parable about forgiveness. There was once a king who decided to settle his loans with workers who owed him money. One debtor owed him 10,000 talents in the currency of that day. So what does that mean? One talent was equal to about 20 years of wages. So multiply 20 by 10,000. The mathematical breakdown shows an astronomical debt. Because the debt was impossible to repay, the king ordered all the debtor's belongings, including his wife and children, to be sold. Falling to his knees, the debtor begged the king for mercy. In a moment of compassion, the king graciously forgave all he owed. Rather than leaving with gratitude, the debtor went to a fellow worker who owed him money, just a fraction of his own debt. He grabbed him by the throat and demanded instant payment. When the man begged for more time, the debtor showed him no concern, but had him arrested and put behind bars. When the king heard what had happened, he was angered and went to the debtor saying, "Shouldn't you have mercy on your fellow worker just as I had mercy on you?" The king then ordered he be put in jail until his debt was paid off. In the same way, our husbands will never be able to pay us back for the wounds they've inflicted on our hearts. It's not just unlikely, it's impossible. There is nothing they can humanly do to repay us, even if they wanted to. Bitterness only served to keep my heart behind bars. Our work to fully heal includes taking steps towards forgiveness, many little yeses, until our hearts become free. Chapter 20. It's never too late for a rewrite. We've never been promised a life without pain. Our lives are surrounded by real people trying to keep their chins above water in the midst of a cataclysmic storm. From best-selling novels to late-breaking news, tragedies abound. While the human drama captures us, what we long for is the victory. I'll never forget a couple I met in New Orleans after their house was buried underwater during Hurricane Katrina. Maggie sat grief-stricken in her wheelchair next to her elderly husband, Sam. Seven of my friends and I had flown to New Orleans to be part of the recovery efforts. Standing outside their home, we suited up in protective gear, white jumpsuits, and a face mask graced with a baby wipe to protect our noses from the stench. Before we gutted their home, Maggie and Sam told us about their emergency evacuation 5 weeks earlier. They had no way of knowing their neighborhood and city would be quarantined off while the water slowly receded. Maggie cried with regret over leaving her four parakeets at home. "I didn't know we couldn't come home. If I'd known, I would have taken my parakeets with me. I put them to bed every night by covering their cage with a dish towel. There was wind and rain pouring, an absolute nightmare. I remember wondering if I should take them, but I didn't want them to get wet. I knew we'd be home the next day. Sam had his hands full trying to get me in the car. I might not have made it out after the levees broke. When we pried the door open and looked inside, we noticed mushrooms growing on the wall. There was a distinct watermark a few inches from the ceiling's edge. It was eerie to see mounds of home furnishing tousled and water-swept amidst brown sludge, collapsed china hutches, and rust-covered appliances. Sheer chaos. Nothing made sense. In the corner of the room, leaning up against an overstuffed chair, was the birdcage. No one wanted to touch it or break the news to Maggie. Finally, one of the guys walked over and peeled the soiled dish towel back. Without a peep, four tiny parakeets' heads looked up. "They're alive," he yelled. "I can't believe they're alive." It was an unbeatable story of a modern-day ark with four parakeets that floated. It's this story that matters most to a 68-year-old woman in a wheelchair who loves to tell it. There are other stories about people whose lives have been rewritten with golden threads of victory. The rawness of Psalms and the stories of Esther, Ruth, and Joseph call me up into places I never imagined possible. Imperfect people who lived through famine, fear, sexual betrayal, and near death, yet strangely through impossible circumstances, found a golden thread of hope. What seems to be the common denominator? Grace, courage, and the presence of Jehovah Ezer. The Lord is my help and champion. Golden Threads. When women share their stories with me, I hear tragedy, but I lean in, waiting and watching for the golden threads of hope. Golden threads are those redemptive moments written into all our stories that weave in the types of goodness that seems to defy gravity. Something or someone steps in to help, delight in us, or rescue. As in Maggie's story, it's a message from beyond us that shows you matter. The way we store memories in our brains often looks more like Sam and Maggie's home. What we most often remember is the brown sludge. But when we ask ourselves, is there anything we are grateful for, any goodness in our stories, we can find golden threads. Write them down and offer gratitude when you notice them. Remind yourself that you matter. It may be a phone call that came in the nick of time, a supportive note or text, a paycheck, or a person who paid a bill when you needed it most. The first apartment I moved into looked and smelled different. Fresh paint and a musty old carpet. I couldn't go back to our home, and I didn't like where I was. As I felt alone and afraid, my mind swirled with questions. Did I do the right thing? Had I made a terrible mistake? To top it all off, I looked out the back door and saw weeds. Wouldn't you know it? I grabbed a garbage bag and began to rip handfuls of weeds from the ground. As I did, I caught a familiar fragrance as the scent of mint filled the air. Mint. These weren't weeds, they were mint plants. As a little girl, I would pick mint leaves and eat them while I walked home from the lake. My hippocampi, Harmony, memory storage, and Amy, relational brain, reminded me of the season in my life when I felt safe and secure. It was this golden thread that quieted my heart and let me know I was exactly where I was supposed to be. Standing Stones. During my travels, I walked the streets of Jerusalem, prayed at the Western Wall, rested in the Garden of Gethsemane, and visited the Temple Mount where King Solomon's temple was built. While Jerusalem is known as the City of Peace, history has shown how the Jewish people have suffered for centuries under the barrages of others who've intended to conquer them. They are amazingly resilient people of tenacious faith who prevail in spite of tremendous grief, war, and suffering. I was shocked as I watched teenage men and women dressed in army fatigues walking the streets with ease. They smiled, posed for selfies, drank coffee, and carried weapons, all while defending their home. It made me think of the women I've met who are supporting and caring for each other along this path. It wasn't our choice to meet under these conditions, but we're bonding in the foxholes as we heal from betrayal. Jerusalem has been completely destroyed twice, attacked 52 times, devastated 23 times, and captured and recaptured 44 times. The rubble from the centuries of battle measures up to 60 feet deep in some areas. Now that's trauma. Our stories include a state of peril and layers of rubble too. On my desk, I have a picture taken in Jerusalem in which I'm standing in front of an ancient stone wall. Above my head is a bronze plaque that reads, Restoration Line. Below the plaque are the wall's original stones, which, in spite of thousands of years of battle, remain securely fastened and stand strong. Above the restoration line is a wooden plank, the old stones fallen, ones that have been carefully put back in place. Putting our lives back together builds resiliency. It's the comeback after facing the traumas, tragedy, and threats. Research now shows how betrayed women, when given proper care and resources, show evidence of post-traumatic growth. I see it in the good stuff that grows out of the compost pile of pain. Resilience is the part of us that walks through difficult times and gets stronger. I did my best to fight for my marriage for nearly a decade. I finally realized the sex addiction was too much for our marriage to overcome. Just like with the battle-fallen stones, I've had to put my life back together and get into the arena again. Dr. Brené Brown's quote from her book Rising Strong rings true. I want to be in the arena. I want to be brave with my life. And when we make the choice to dare greatly, we sign up to get kicked. We can choose courage or we can choose comfort, but we can't have both, not at the same time. Vulnerability is not winning or losing. It's having the courage to show up and be seen when we have no control over the outcome. Vulnerability is not weakness. It's our greatest measure of courage. It takes courage to fight. For many of us, it takes tremendous courage to stay. For others, it takes incredible courage to go. But today, you're in the arena fighting for your peace of mind, your life and health, your husband and marriage, your sons and daughters, your fiancé or boyfriend who is sexually acting out. Like you, I'm fighting to restore truth, honor, and human dignity. As I've embraced the rewritten version of my life, I've discovered there is more to learn and more to be said through our stories. No matter where you are, or where you've been, there are chapters being written with your name on it. Tina, who fought for Tim and started a recovery movement for us. The unforgettable Anne, who with her husband symbolically buried First John in their backyard in exchange for a committed and sexually sober Second John. She contagiously inspires women to hold on to their worth. Nancy, who lost her marriage and is now a wise, passionate sage for many. Grace, who felt incredible odds and saw Rob's heart restored. Together, they're enjoying a life of second chances. Stacy, who held on to herself by courageously letting go of a man who had no desire to change. He wanted to keep his reputation comfortably intact along with his affair. Lego Bob and Queen Leanne, who together continue to walk out their recovery. I was in the studio doing live radio one day when a man named Bob called in. Leanne bought a Lego castle, and for every day Bob maintained his sexual sobriety, they added another Lego to their castle. After 996 days of sobriety, Leanne gave Bob the Lego Queen as a tangible gesture of his earned safety and trust. Like repairing the walls in Jerusalem, Bob and Leanne are replacing the stones once fallen and are rewriting their story above the restoration line. These women have fought courageously and are still in the arena. Some of us have landed on our feet married, and others are single again. Together, our stories prove that it's possible to have victory after sexual betrayal. Regardless of how we land, our lives don't have to be casualties. Our upside is our best side. Over the years, I've had to face the rumblings about my failed marriage. We didn't end up in the Hall of Fame, and I left defeated, weathered, and wounded. With each story of victory, I've felt a sense of personal loss. I know I battled to the best of my ability. As much as I long to get to the other side of this mess together, I discovered that particular victory wasn't possible. It takes two. Yet now I can see that out of my darkest days grew parts of me I never knew existed. Self-compassion, ability to sit in pain without trying to fix it, tenacity and prevailing grit through difficult times, ability to discern what is being said between the lines, passion for truth and disdain over the hideousness of deception, ability to learn how to be intimately connected to myself and others. Victorious living now includes treasuring who I am. So what's the story of your upside? What stones of resiliency are being carved out in you? We can't have victory without a battle, and being victorious isn't about winning every battle we fight. It's about hanging on to what is good. It's pressing through the mess and becoming a better version of ourselves. It's accepting who we are, knowing our wounds don't have to define us. It's discovering who we are in spite of it all. A quote on my refrigerator says it best. Fall down 7 times, get up 8. Victory is about getting up, and that's why we need your story. Twin Towers. Women often ask, are there couples who get to the other side of this? Is there hope? I say yes. I'm incredibly grateful to those of you I have met who have gone through the experience and as a couple have transformed into something very different. You've given me hope that it is possible. The word picture I often use comes from our own national tragedy, 9/11. I've gathered a series of images that powerfully move from the stage of initial shocking impact to a living memorial. You can go online and see them for yourselves. Images of the plane impacting the two buildings. Sexual betrayal, breach of infidelity. The towers collapsing to the ground with incalculable loss of lives and property. Impact of sexual deception, devastation, layers of loss, and the recognition that our lives will never be the same again. First responders assisting with the crisis and loss. Calls to friends, counselors, recovery groups, and clergy as we look for rescue and support while digging out. A grieving nation. Photos, names of loved ones, candlelight vigils, and ceremonies surrounding what was. Deep grief and a desire to get out of the pain. Letting go of what was and taking one day at a time as we grow into something different. Years of repair. The restoration plan, which includes years of work to reestablish safety, honesty, and sexual sobriety. Restore trust and rebuild emotional and sexual intimacy. Making the 9/11 memorial. The towers were replaced with a memorial, living trees, and beacons of light. We take on a new shape. I love the symbolism found in the 9/11 memorial. Beams of light shining up through darkness. You are the world's light, a city on a hill, glowing in the night for all to see. Matthew chapter 5, verse 14. As couples move through the restoration process, they see each other differently, and often others see evidence of change as well. They have the opportunity to explore new meanings from their pain. In her book, Hold Me Tight, Dr. Sue Johnson highlights questions that are commonly asked when a couple's attachment has been ruptured. Do you need me? Are you there for me? Am I valued and accepted by you? Do I and my feelings matter to you? Will you respond to me when I call? With breaches of trust, I'd add one more. Can I trust you? These questions, while difficult to ask, must become a part of the conversation if the couple is to grow and repair. Emotional presence and safety make intimacy building possible. Whether it's seen through a national disaster or our own tragedy, the power of a story is remembered in our mind's eye. When we come together and share our stories about how we made it through this difficult time, it helps us find hope. It strengthens what we know to be possible. Take a moment to remember the times that others have acted on your behalf, golden threads. Do you remember how it felt? Remembering is a powerful way to get through difficult times. We remember that someone loves us, is praying for us, and believes in us. We remember a story of how God showed up for us or someone else. If it happened once, maybe it can happen again. That's the power of a personal story, a testimony. When we confront the dark times, the sexual betrayals, the full disclosures, and the impact the betrayal has had on our families, we hold firm and stand on what we know to be true. In doing so, we face our fears and rise up as Ezer warriors full of courage. We stand for what is right. We stand for truth. Our testimonies not only strengthen us, but also strengthen other women around us. And during seasons when we end up in the trenches and are literally trying to catch our breath, we give ourselves grace. It's about stopping to take care of our wounds and weariness. A favorite psalm of mine is, "Unto you, O Lord, do I bring my life." Psalm 25, verse 1. At times, all I had was two speeds, sitting and breathing. And that was good enough. Over the years of my recovery, one of the things I've enjoyed most is telling stories that include a fresh word from God. The audiences of women I've spoken to have been remarkable. Most women coming to a conference on betrayal arrive dazed, confused, and wounded from the sexual infidelity and deception. Like all of us, they're looking for help and hope. Here are two stories worthy of sharing that have been time-stamped and chronicled. One is about a white horse, and the other is about a lion. The story of a white horse. It was a muggy summer day in Dallas, Texas, when I first met Rhonda. She had been divorced for 5 years from a man who served in the military. Brian told me he was bored and wanted to explore the swinging lifestyle. He told me if I didn't go along with it, he'd go outside our marriage to get what he was looking for. I hated myself for years after going along with Brian's plan. I resented him and did everything I could to numb out, binging, getting drunk, and taking pills, especially when we were on our way to meet others for sex. Over the weekend, Rhonda talked about the difficulties she was having dating men since her divorce. I think the real problem is, after what happened with Brian, I don't trust anyone. I've pulled back from men because I'm afraid. Rhonda discovered her trauma-induced shame beliefs were, I'm not good enough, I'm in danger, and I can't trust any man. Before the opening session on Saturday, an email was received from David on our prayer team. As I was praying for the women, this verse came to my mind. Then I saw heaven open, and there was a white horse. Its rider is called Faithful and True. It is with justice that he judges and fights his battles. Revelation chapter 19, verse 11. I decided to share this verse at our next session. At the break, Rhonda came up to introduce herself to me. The look of surprise on her face was priceless. Before coming this weekend, I commissioned an artist to paint a picture of me with my horse, Elegante. The artist texted me while you were speaking and asked me to approve her drawing before adding watercolor. The artist said two words kept coming to her mind as she sketched, faithful and true. I couldn't believe it when you mentioned that verse in Revelation. I just had to show you. I couldn't believe my eyes. This is a testimony. It's Rhonda's story being rewritten with a message of her incredible worth. Like Rhonda, we have similar stories. This is how Jehovah El-Roi, the God who sees me, works on our behalf. Because sexual betrayal so intimately impacts our hearts, I believe God showed up in the details by using this artist to reveal that he is our faithful and true one. Bringing us the art in this way signifies he's alive and well, and most importantly, he sees us. In the sketch, the woman is wearing a queenly robe and royal crown. Little did the women know, they'd be given this verse and a keychain shaped like a crown that evening. It's evidence of our great worth. You will also be considered a crown of glory and splendor in the hand of the Lord, and a royal diadem exceedingly beautiful in the hand of your God. Isaiah chapter 62, verse 3. The story of the lion. It was a cool November day as I sat in an airport waiting to fly into Reston, Virginia. Looking down at my phone, I saw a text come in from one of the counselors, Barbara, saying, I'm praying for you all this weekend. I am specifically praying for deliverance. When I got into my hotel room, I decided to look up the word deliverance. It means the action of being rescued or set free, and a formal and authoritative utterance. Early the next morning, I got an email from a woman named Gail. I will pray God will break those chains and truly set the women free. He is alive in us and able to overcome. I'm painting a lion as we speak. He is the Lion of Judah, and he is on the move in your hearts. Unleash him. I just started painting him, so it's mostly the underpainting. Just remember, I have a bunch of work to do on this painting, just like the Lord continues to change me. Similar to the sketch of the white horse, the artwork of the lion was just getting started. Concealed within this story is the idea of an underpainting. These are the layers of color we never see. The artist paints them underneath what will become the finished art piece, to create richness and depth. Like the artist Gail, we can feel exposed by our unfinished product, the imperfections of us that others typically don't see. Yet when we share our stories and invite others into these layers of rich imperfection, we can find comfort and acceptance there. After seeing the painting, one of the women shared how much the idea of underpainting helped her open up and her partner trauma group. I felt so much shame about Adam's sexting and affairs. I didn't have enough curves to keep his interest. I couldn't keep the pain in anymore, but it was too embarrassing to talk about. When I saw the underpainting of the lion, I realized I don't have to be perfect. My beliefs were, my body's not good enough, and I'm shameful. Now I know those beliefs aren't true. Why am I letting Adam's betrayal judge my body? Why am I telling my body there's something wrong with it? I used to like how I looked. When I said it out loud, the women cheered. They met me with grace and love. Instead of hating my body, I brushed in some new layers of paint. Amanda. Investing in whatever it takes to heal our underlying shame beliefs will influence how we see ourselves on the surface. That may be the most impactful portion of our recovery work. 2 hours later, Sharon, one of the women on our prayer team, emailed a formal declaration of hope that included these lines. Here's my prayer for you and the women as I read Lamentations. Declaration of Hope. I declare God's faithful love over you and bless you with his love that never ends. I declare over you God's mercies never cease and bless you with his mercies raining down upon you in this time. I declare over you how great is the Lord's faithfulness, and bless you with the greatness of his faithfulness towards you in the midst of all that surrounds you. I declare over you that the Lord's mercies begin afresh each morning, and bless you with his new mercies for today. I declare over you that the Lord is your inheritance, and bless you with all he has to give and provide you in this very moment. I declare for you that your hope is in the Lord. Yes, I bless you that your hope is in the Lord. I declare for you that the Lord is good to those who depend on him, to those who search for him. And so I bless you with the goodness that comes from waiting quietly for his grace, his daily saving grace, his deliverance. Yes, I bless you with the Lord's daily mercies raining down. I bless you to stand with ever-renewed hope in him. I bless you with the goodness that comes from quietly waiting upon his grace, his daily saving grace, his mighty deliverance, because your hope is in him. I bless you that he and he alone is Jesus, Lord of Lords, King of Kings, your champion in the seen and unseen realm. Yes, I bless you that he is your faithful and true one who rides the white horse. I bless you with daily hope arising. Hope, hope, and more hope. It was stunning to see how again these lines spoke of a faithful and true one and a white horse. God, as our Jehovah Ezer, connected three women, an artist, a counselor, and a prayer warrior, to bring us a formal declaration of his presence, a promise of deliverance, and hope. Your story in the bigger picture. As women, we rise up with courage and stand on what we know to be true. Be patient with yourself as you're in the process of repairing trust. Trust grows when we remember who we are and look for those golden threads of others caring for us. I'm walking proof that it's possible to have our trust restored after it's been deeply undermined. I can't trust anyone becomes I can choose whom to trust. I can't trust my judgment becomes I can learn to trust myself again. I'm powerless and helpless becomes I can now make choices. I'm not enough becomes I am enough. Sexual betrayal in our relationships creates fear. Fear is a legitimate response to a real threat. But once the threat is over, fear can hold us hostage and keep us out of life, opportunities, and relationships. Healing comes when we face the truth of what happened to us and establish safety in our relationship so that we can move forward. We don't heal by avoiding our fear. We heal by facing it. In the big picture, don't give up. Whatever it takes for you to heal, do it. Pressing through your troubles means reaching out for help, tending to your wounds, and getting what you need to heal. Being a victim doesn't have to be our identity or destiny for that matter. We won't find peace, rest, or healthy relationships as long as we stay in that place. Our goal is to move out of being a victim of betrayal by growing into victorious, empowered ways of living. We are able to identify our needs and responsibly meet them. We listen to our hearts and bodies and take care of ourselves. We can use our voices to make clear requests and advocate for truth. We can choose to repair after safety and sobriety have been restored. We can free ourselves from resentment, bitterness, and unforgiveness. We make thoughtful decisions about whether to stay or go when emotional safety, sexual integrity, and restoration are not possible. We do what it takes to move from shame into kindness, truth, and self-compassion. We are able to discern the areas of our lives and history that need healing. We are able to share our stories from a place of strength and self-assurance. We learn we are free to make choices and take responsibility for what we can do. You must own your healing. This isn't about waiting for your husband, boyfriend, or loved one to change. It's about learning to make yourself a priority. You've been traumatically impacted. This audiobook is about what you can do to heal your body, mind, brain, and spirit. As Ezra Kenegdos, we have passionate hearts. We are women who fight for what's right and those we love. We despise injustice and are defenders of those who are being oppressed. We see what's happening firsthand to our families from the onslaught of pornography and its easy access into our homes. Sexual deception and infidelity damage us. Dietrich Bonhoeffer said, "We are not to simply bandage the wounds of victims beneath the wheels of injustice. We are to drive a spoke into the wheel itself. We can't do it by ourselves. We can do it by locking arms with one woman at a time. At the end of the conferences I speak at, the women stand side by side and join hands throughout the room. As we clasp hands, we lift our arms to the ceiling. Looking around the room, we see it creates an unending circle of connected W's, women of worth. Now imagine yourselves, whether in a circle in a partner recovery group or with arms lifted high in a stadium. This image resounds the truth of our battle cry. We are women of worth. When we know who we are and what we're fighting for, we're fearless. You can make it to the other side. I did. And I'm here to tell you, you're worth it." Resources: 12-step programs dedicated to helping those with compulsive sexual behaviors. Sex Addicts Anonymous, SAA. Sexaholics Anonymous, SA. Sexual Compulsives Anonymous, SCA. Sexual Recovery Anonymous, SRA. Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous, SLAA. Support groups dedicated to helping spouses and partners impacted by sexual betrayal and compulsive sexual behaviors. Partners of Sex Addicts, POSA, POSA. Infidelity Survivors Anonymous, ISA. Codependents Anonymous International, CODA, CODA. Codependents of Sex Addicts, COSA, COSA. S-Anon, Al-Anon. 12-step programs dedicated to helping couples. Recovering Couples Anonymous, RCA. professionals trained in sexual betrayal, compulsive sexual behaviors, and partner trauma. The Association of Partners of Sex Addicts Trauma Specialists, APSATS, APSATS. International Institute for Trauma and Addiction Professionals, ITAP, IITAP. Society for the Advancement of Sexual Health, SASH, SASH. International Association of Certified Sexual Addiction Specialists, IAC, SAS. Intensive Outpatient and Inpatient Sex Addiction Treatment Programs, International Institute for Trauma and Addiction Professionals, ITAP, IITAP. Brain-based evaluations and or treatments. Amen Clinics, www.amenclinics.com. Brain State Technologies, Brainwave Optimization, www.brainstatetech.com. Max My Brain, www.maxmybrain.com. Crisis Hotlines, Domestic Abuse Hotline, www.thehotline.org. Suicide Prevention Lifeline, www.suicidepreventionhotline.org. Sexual Assault Hotline, www.rainn.org. Technology Protection and Supports, Covenant Eyes, www.covenanteyes.com. Cyber Safety Cop, www.cybersafetycop.com. About the author. Dr. Sherry Keffer is a regular co-host of the nationally syndicated Christian talk show, New Life Live. Her warmth, genuine concern, and intuitive advice have been a source of healing for more than 2 million people each week. For nearly 20 years, she's been working as a marriage and family therapist and currently has a private practice in Newport Beach, California. Dr. Keffer has continued her education by becoming a consultant in eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, and is a certified clinical partner specialist and a board member of the Association of Partners of Sex Addicts Trauma Specialists. She is also a certified sex addiction therapist with the International Institute for Trauma and Addiction Professionals and a certified clinical sex addiction specialist with the International Association of Certified Sexual Addiction Specialists. She is a keynote speaker and passionate advocate for women who've experienced betrayal, and she holds a doctorate in marriage and family therapy and a master's degree in theology, both from Fuller Theological Seminary. Thank you for listening to this recording of Intimate Deception, written and read by Dr. Sherry Keffer. This audio recording was produced in 2018 by Christian Audio, which owns the copyright. No portion of this recording may be reproduced for any reason without prior written consent from Christian Audio. This edition, issued by contractual arrangement with Revell, a division of Baker Publishing Group. Originally published in English as Intimate Deception, Healing the Wounds of Sexual Betrayal, copyright 2018 by Dr. Sherry Keffer. All rights reserved. Please visit christianaudio.com, facebook.com/christianaudio, or twitter.com/Christian Audio to offer your impressions of this work and to explore additional titles.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.